Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
The next conversation that I'm going to have even more significant because as South Africa, we are so diverse. You know, you have different nationalities that have come together. We've got different religions. We've got different cultures. We've got different indigenous cultures. You know, in fact, yeah, how do we make it all work together without becoming a homogenous society where everybody's the same, where we retain our own identity? Or maybe that's not, you know, maybe that's not the answer, to retain our own identities, because maybe that makes us, it's going to lead to tribalism, which we also don't want. So I've invited Lubomai Khisa. He's no stranger to this show, and he's certainly no stranger to you. And that's what I want to speak to him about. Good morning, Luba. How are you?
Good morning, Kathy. I'm well. Yourself?
Oh, lovely to hear from you and lovely to speak to you. So this is a conversation that is also no stranger between the two of us. This is something that we've certainly discussed. But building a multicultural, unified South Africa, how do we deal with a racist past and, you know, how do you see it? How do you see it playing out in terms of retaining our own identities within the South African landscape?
Sure, Kathy, it's a difficult one, but I think it's something that needs honesty in how we deal with it. I mean, you and I have spoken at length, and our initial view was that the born frees would be spared from, you know, racist thoughts and behavior, and all we had to do was just sit out for the older generation, you know, the people who were born in the 60s and 70s, to kind of shuffle off, and then we have a newer, younger generation that wasn't troubled by this. But I think if you look at social media in South Africa, and you look at the Seneca issue, and you look at generally who comes out in the EFF rallies, then you start to see that maybe it's wishful thinking to simply believe that this is a problem of those who lived through apartheid, and those who didn't live through it are untainted by it. And so we have to perhaps acknowledge a far bigger problem, especially if you look at social media. And then if you look across the ocean, look at the U.S. I mean, the U.S., you know, got to deal with this issue far earlier than we did in South Africa, but you've got the Black Lives Matter movement, which, you know, started fairly recently and then moved around the world. But then you have to say they haven't really come to grips with it. And then if you go to the UK, you know, if you look at social media, I saw lots of people talking of the Windrush generation, prominent people like, you know, the actress Naomi Campbell, that then gave the impression that clearly this is still a problem in the West as well. So for us to naively believe that we'd kind of jump over this hurdle in a decade or two, I think was very naive, to put it mildly. So we do have a challenge, and I think we are polarized in many issues, whether it's land and how we see things like murder. You know, it does bring out the worst in us. I think, in part, we have to acknowledge our past, that it is different, it is difficult. And part of that is that we are not able to look at that past honestly. I think I've shared this with you before, where I mentioned an experience that when I was much younger and I started working and I was in banking, I'd often meet older white males who'd been in the army, and they would talk about their experience in the army with a lot of fondness and pride. You know, when they were sharing leadership experiences, people would say, you know, when I was in the army, and at one point I had to say, guys, you need to realize that your army days don't necessarily have the same nostalgic feeling for all of us. You need to be more sensitive. So hence I thought, well, that generation will move on. But if I looked at the anger that I saw, for instance, in my own kids who were born frees, with the, you know, sympathy with the Black Lives Matter movement, it was almost far more angry and feverish than, you know, our generation's response to it. And I think for me, there lies the challenge, is that we've mistakenly believed that the younger generation are somehow immune and we've solved the differences. And I think in South Africa, we haven't. So to answer your question, how do we build a society? I think there's no clear answer, because all of us will want our identity. I mean, if you talk to a Jewish community, you will not want to give up the essence of being Jewish, be it, and I know it's more difficult in the Jewish community because it's linked to faith, be it, you know, keeping Shabbat, the holidays and diet and so forth. So it's not as complex in other societies, communities, but it's still there. So, people identify in terms of, be it food they eat, be it, cultural practices.
Tradition.
Asking me, yeah. Maybe, may not tradition. So I may not necessarily be the best person, because remember, my struggle has been, do I need to define myself historically with who I was born or how I live my life? And I've been kind of leaning towards the latter, to say I should be allowed to shift, because we do change, Kathy, whether we like it or not. For instance, my identity as a black South African is probably different to my kids. How they view themselves are very different to how my parents view themselves, but we're reluctant to make that transition. So there's many areas to it, because, you know, there's one talking about issues that are thorny, like land. There's talking about our history, oppression and so forth, and privilege. Then there's talking about who I am. And we are not even able, I think, to get to grips with that one. I've always said we don't talk of ourselves as being South African. There's no common South African identity like you would get in the U.S. As bad as things are in the U.S., you know, you've got people who came from all sorts of countries, you know, from Netherlands, from Italy, from, you know, wherever, Ireland. But, you know, if you went back 100 years, you would find, if you watch like Gangs of New York, you'd find people stayed in pockets that were Italian, that were, you know, Irish. But over time, those have come down, and people identify first and foremost as being American. And then other issues that, you know what, we come from a country, might that be Ireland or Italy, that would express itself more maybe in social gatherings and meals and things like that. In South Africa, we're not even there. We still don't even identify first and foremost as South African. We still cling to that different identity. I'm African. I found it now. I was traveling to Limpopo and Free State. It's very difficult, you know, because somebody was laughing at me where I'll be reluctant to learn the language of somebody else. I'm talking now of Tswana. I'm talking of what they would speak in Limpopo. You know, part of me still resists. And so when I get somewhere to Limpopo and somebody greets me in a different African language, I will default either to Tosa or English, and I will make a point to show them that I don't understand what you're saying. So, so somebody who struggled with it as much as I have is still reluctant to make that transition. I go to the Free State and people speak Sotho, and I can't understand it.
You and I are on exactly the same page. When I go, yes, and somebody speaks Sotho to me, I also revert to English so that they know that I can't understand what they're saying. Okay, I'm just making light of this. I feel deeply ashamed that I can't speak a vernacular language. I can't speak a language that the majority of my countrymen speak. I mean,
able to speak. In my case, it's almost a reluctance. So you find with many of us in the black community, the reluctance to even learn. So it's not that we can't speak it. It wouldn't be difficult to learn it, but there's almost the defiance of saying, no, I will not. It's not my language. And, you know, numerically, we are far superior to the other ethnic groups. So I'm not going there. So part of it is that almost hidden kind of, almost like a sweet mentality that I'm going to protect what I think is my identity. And I refuse to learn another language. I refuse to conform. And so I refuse to embrace a South African identity. Now, the question is, I think there's a lot of value in culture that we need to preserve, but we also need to strive towards some kind of common identity. But to do that, I think we need to have discussions. We need to be able to be far more open in talking, because what you saw, for instance, last week, where somebody pulls out the old flag, or somebody says, I long for the days of the Republic, or somebody says, let's arm on both sides, is not helpful, because we kind of perpetuating this hostility where we're not finding ourselves, where we're not moving closer to each other. But I think it begins with us talking. I've always said, and this is not probably the most popular comment, South Africans are not as racially pure as they would like to believe. many of them. There has been a fair degree of mingling, of intermarriage between everybody. But we like to believe that, oh, you know, I am 100% pure Xhosa, that if I trace my roots for the last 1,000 years, I will find only Xhosa speaking people and blood. And that's absolute nonsense. You will find that there's other ethnic groups, and you may find that there's even other racial groups in all of them.
Well, I think that that's actually that's true about humanity. I don't think that that's just about South Africans. I think that that's especially now that you can do genetic testing and you can look at your roots. I know that both my children have done it, and it's fascinating to see all the different ethnic groups that make us who we are today. When you're talking about a unified South Africa and, you know, holding on to our traditions and our customs and our religions and having our own identity within the landscape. I mean, you and I had a conversation about Reconciliation Day. And
yes.
Reconciliation Day, it used to be known as Dingaan's Day, I think it was. Right?
Day of the Vow or something
Day,
like that.
Day
first,
of the Vow, and then it was Dingaan's Day. Before that, it was Dingaan's Day. And you were actually saying about, you know, if you are a Zulu, then Shaka is this incredible character. But if you are not, he was an incredibly negative character.
Even the narrative of Shaka would work, would kind of arouse that kind of wonderful emotion in the Zulu community. Outside of the Zulu community, the figure of Shaka doesn't quite have the same wonderful nostalgic, historical remembrance. People look at it differently. The Xhosas, the Tswanas, most other groups, to the point where many of them actually think that the Shaka narrative is largely embellished and with lots of, it's hyped to be significantly more than what it would be. But it's not one that rallies and unites the whole nation. It might unite the Zulu people around it, but not everybody else.
Yeah.
But I think, Kathy, the question is, I honestly believe that there is certainly place for uniqueness of heritage and culture and history. We can't deny that our histories are different and they bring a lot of diversity and richness into it. But we have to be able to speak about such history and such diversity in a non-confrontational manner. The problem is that we haven't done that. So when we do, it's around an area of conflict. So if we're talking about land, automatically people are polarized.
So it's
reactive. If we're talking about murder, yes, so if we talk about murder, be it farmers or be it people in townships, automatically it's polarized. So we need to somehow move that discussion away from those heated moments and have the discussion when we aren't fighting about anything, when I'm not trying to reclaim land, or I'm not trying to convince you that black experience is worse than white or anything else, where we say, you know what, let's have the discussion so that I understand your history, you understand mine, where we come from. And we have a common, whether we like it or not, to a large degree, we have a shared destiny, and we need to find each other. You know, I've said before that in other countries, whether you went to Mozambique or you went to other African countries, when independence came or civil war came, you know, certain groups of people left, and therefore the indigenous people were left there to figure out what to do by themselves. South Africa is unique in the sense that we didn't really have a civil war in that definition, and we didn't have the mass exodus. We did, we had one, but a large number of people stayed behind who would have been classified as of European ancestry. Now the question is, how do we forge a common history together, mindful that our past is different, our past is painful. And hence I'm saying we need to talk about it, but that discussion cannot always occur when angers have at a boiling point. We need to have it outside of that.
Yeah, be when, proactive, you know, rather than,
well.
Yeah.
Yes.
It also can't happen at 8:54, well. Luba. I'm sorry, but we have to, we have to let you go and get on with your day. We are also out of time, but, thank you so much. And I'm sure that this is an ongoing conversation, you know, about being proactive. You raised such a good point about, you know,
but you still need to follow up on what you wanted to do on this matter. So I'll leave that challenge with you.
All right. Thank you so much.